When it's time to scale your business, it's time for Shopify. Get everything you need to grow the way you want. Like, all the way. Stack more sales with the best converting checkout on the planet. Track your cha-chings from every channel, right in one spot. And turn real-time reporting into big-time opportunities. Take your business to a whole new level. Switch to Shopify. Start your free trial today.
Tasty, tasty things. Locked in the bunker, shadow shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. I've been enjoying a whole lot of Schmunkerl lately. If you know, you know. And the peanut thinks she's queen of the world, so she's now formerly known as the Giftswerk. Why so much German? I can't even tell you. It's just the way it happens to be right now. On with the show. Well, it's Sunday, it's pouring rain, it feels like winter in Sydney, Australia, which means it feels like summer everywhere else in the world. Not really. People think Australia's always hot. Before I moved to Australia, I thought, oh, Australia, it's hot, it's tropical, it's always hot, right? There's wild monkeys and shit. Not so much. It's only about like 11 degrees out there today, and it's bombing down with rain, and it's allegedly still summer. That said, it is what it is. It's Sunday, we're about to start another work week. Monday is the start of the week, and lucky for me, I love what I do. You know, Monday's not painful. I love the people I work with, I love the people I work for, I love the customers I interact with. It's a rare thing. But I did start this last week off brutally unwell. We got back from Fiji about 2 weeks ago, and I don't know what happened. I must have picked up a virus or something. I had exploding colon syndrome for like 3 days straight, right? And the industry I work in, if you are unwell in that way, you are absolutely not going to work for a number of days. So I spent Sunday, Monday, Tuesday last week. Well, Sunday, Monday, certainly just kind of curled up into a ball playing Fallout 4. You know, I love Fallout, right? It's TV show aside, I've always loved Fallout. I go back to Fallout 4 or 5 times a year and just fall down that rabbit hole. It's so good. Janky and all. I love the jank. And by Tuesday was day 3. I was feeling a little bit better. Back to work Wednesday. Was supposed to have game night Thursday. Just pulled the pin on it just in case because, you know, as a 52-year-old man, I don't mind losing a board game. I always say, I like to win. I love to play, but I'll tell you what I don't want to do is shit myself at the board game table. And I just thought it's not what I want to do on a Thursday. So we canceled Thursday, but Saturday being yesterday, we had a board game day, had some of the boys around. We started at 9 in the morning, I think 9:15. We finished, it was just about 10 at night when we finished, and we played 4 games. Now that doesn't sound like much, 4 games in a whole day. The first game of the day was 4 hours, I think, plus lunch breaks. We started at 9. So we played 4 games. I loved every single one of them for different reasons. And so we'll just kick off. We played my baby speakeasy yesterday multiplayer. Played it 4-player. Yesterday at the table all day long, we had myself, we had Super Trooper, we had Voldemort, we had Dustin. And it was a great day. You know, it was such a good day. There's nothing better. And the bunker, as I've said before, no windows, no fresh air. I mean, I've got air conditioning and heating in here, so you can get the air moving around, but it really is just a cave of happiness. And so with 4 of us, we locked ourselves in, and we were going to play Speakeasy. Now, I had only played Speakeasy solo before, and it was when it first arrived, so it had to be 6 or 7 weeks ago. And I thought, oh, no problem. I'll watch Paul Grogan's video. If you want to learn to play Speakeasy, go watch Paul Grogan's video on his Gaming Rules channel. It is fantastic. He is certainly for heavy games, the best video teacher in the market. Shout out, Paul. We played Speakeasy. Now, spoiler alert, I think Speakeasy is a spectacular game. I really do. I think the theme, I think the rhythm of it, I think the tempo and the pacing of it is outstanding. I think the presentation of it is 11 out of 10. No notes. I, having played it now multiplayer, I do not think it's a four-player game. I think I'm okay playing a game for 4.5 hours. And the thing I really like about Speakeasy is that, unlike a lot of Lacerda's, Speakeasy is a Vital Lacerda game, if you just tuned in by mistake expecting a fried chicken podcast and, oh shit, this board game's what? You get, what is it, 11 turns, 4, 3, 3, 1. You get 11 turns in the game, right? And that's it. And 11 turns in 4.5 hours, I mean, it's fine. It really is fine, but there was a lot of downtime. And I think I would, well, not I think, jumping right to the end of this, I'd love to play it again at 3. I have a sneaking suspicion that 3 is going to be the sweet spot for Speakeasy. I think at 2, because there's no mitigation of the board at different player counts. I guess that's not true. There's another side for 2-player. So I'd have to have a look at that and how that changes. So I'd like to play it at 2. I'd like to play it at 3. And I think playing it at 2 could be really interesting, because unlike a lot of Lacerda's, particularly if I think back to the last one, which was Inventions, if you're playing at 2, then you have another mechanic you've got to monitor and use around the board that kind of just blocks things off. And that's fine. It wasn't something that had a huge overhead for Inventions. But Speakeasy at 4, it was overly long for me. It was 4.5 hours, I think, if it was a minute. And it was, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to talk through Speakeasy in detail, because trying to talk you through a Vital Lacerda game in a podcast that is more than just about that game, we could talk about it for 40 minutes. But in Speakeasy, it's basically a worker placement game. And unlike most of Vital's worker placement games, or most worker placement games in general, but certainly Vital's worker placement games, with very few exceptions, you can't get cock-blocked from your spaces. You know, there's a number of worker placement spaces up along the top of the board, and if somebody's in the space you want, you can go down to the park, and basically, it's like a clandestine meeting at the park. The person that you want to talk to is meeting you at the park, is kind of the theme. But what you do is you swap places with the person who's in the space that you want, and they get a little benefit. It's nice. That can only be done 3 times per round in a 4-player game. So once it's been exercised 3 times, you are blocked out of spaces, but you've got a lot of options. Like most Lacerda's, it's very sandboxy. And that sandboxy nature gives you a number of ways to victory. You know, for example, we're running speakeasies. We're gangsters in Prohibition era U.S. in Manhattan, not Chicago, which is interesting, in Manhattan. And there are a number of ways to get rum, right? So you can have your own stills, and your stills can be operating, and they can pump out rum, or you can buy it from the rum runner boats, which is a perfectly viable and legitimate way to get rum. You can hijack the boats, you can hit the boats, and if you hit the boats, you get a little extra benefit in that there's a crate, there's a little stash that comes off, and the crate has a single benefit, a single huzzah, like that's what you get. And on the backside of the crate, there's an ongoing benefit. And you know what these are before you hit the boat, right? There's no mystery. It's not like you're spending all your time and effort to get up to hitting the boats, and you get the crate and you go, oh, screw that, no interest whatsoever. And with very few exceptions, with the exceptions of the mob war phase, which has a little bit of a surprise, it's deterministic. The whole thing's deterministic. You know before you take a turn whether there's no dice, there's no hidden information. If you're going to hit the boat, you know before you start whether you're going to be successful or not. There's no flip a card and see how you go. There's none of that whatsoever. If you're trying to move in to a district and take over one of the generic's the wrong word, neutral speakeasies, which are, you know, they're called mobster speakeasies. We're all mobsters, but they're red and you can take them over. You know exactly what's needed before you do so. The only part that's a little bit of a surprise is if you're in a space, if you're in a district that is getting a mob war next round, because you know they're all marked, you don't know exactly what the strength of that mob war is going to be. Now you have a little indicator on the side of the board that will tell you what the range of strength will be in there. But when I started my game yesterday, I completely had the time, not timeline, I suppose the flow of a mob war backwards in my head. So I started out, I had 2 speakeasies out. I was going into at the end of Act 1 where I had 3 speakeasies on the board. I'm like, oh, that's really solid. I'm in a good spot. Mob war came out and wiped out 2 of them because I completely fucked up in my head how that worked. I was devastated. It was devastating, right? I'm like, oh, ah. Oh, okay. But you know what? It's such a good game, and I had such a good time. You know, I recovered mostly, which is fine. I think Speakeasy, as far as Vitellus Herd's games go, is one of the most thematic with the way the themes integrate into the game, the game choices, the gameplay. I think it's up there with theme for me with Lisboa. I think Lisboa has the most integrated theme, as it's my humble opinion, right, guys, which is worth absolutely nothing if I want to take it to the bank and deposit it. But I think Speakeasy is his most thematic. I think the actions and the choices you make in it make the most sense. You know, in Kanban, if you, for example, and I bounced off Kanban, so take this with a grain of salt. If you want a car part, you can't necessarily get the part you want. You got to get the part you don't want and then travel to another location with your worker and exchange it for the part you do want. But sometimes you need a voucher beforehand. There's a lot of occluded actions that you're like, oh, I've got to take these 11 steps in exactly the right order to get a fucking car part. Like, okay, I get it. I totally get it, right? Speakeasy, there's not really any of that. You know, I want to send some of my family members out to protect my speakeasies, because if they're not protected and there are cops in the area, they don't operate. Thematic, right? The cops are there, and you don't have one of your dudes out front with a Tommy gun, your speakeasy's not in operation. There's only two steps. You got to get a dude unlocked, and you got to send a dude out there. Makes sense, right? You've got to get a family member recruited, and you got to send him out. If you are attacking a boat at the docks and you're not strong enough, you can enlist the help of other gangsters, it costs you a little bit of money, and boom, you're done, right? It's really, really clever. There's some really clever bits in there. I think I'd like to play it again at 3, and I'd like to play it again at 2, and then I'll make a decision as to where it sits. For me, it's certainly top 3 Lacerda's, even though it was 4.5 hours of my life. You know, I really, really enjoyed the play. The important thing about Speakeasy to note is there can be a bit of downtime, but you need to keep an eye on the board state, right? Because if you're planning to do something 3 turns away, you know, you're 4th in line and they're on turn 1 at the table, whatever. The board state can change so meaningfully that you can't do what you want to do. And I'm not talking about the worker placement space being blocked out. It may be that somebody's hit the boat you wanted to hit, and now it's harder to hit that boat, or the boat's moved, right? If once the boats get hit or they get traded with, they move all the way around Manhattan Island. And so if you're not paying attention, if you tune out and pick your phone up and do something else for the 15 minutes, whatever the downtime is between turns, by the time it comes back round to you, you're not ready to take your turn whatsoever. And this is unusual for me. It has happened to me a couple of times. I remember once at, I think it was PlayCon last year, I actually was referred to as Dustin by one of our regular listeners because I was taking too long to take my turn in Bone Wars. Thank you. It was a memorable moment. I'll never forget it. And I've worked on my personal improvement ever since. But there were a couple of times in Speakeasy where it came right around to my turn, and I'd had a plan and had a plan. It came around to me, and I'm like, oh, I've got to pivot. And then I had to stare at the board for 3 or 4 minutes to decide what to do next. And I really liked that, because too often with these big, heavy Euros, it's a bit of multiplayer solitaire, and you just like, well, this is what I'm going to do. And this, I mean, not really with Lacerda's, because you have to have 2 or 3 options for your next turn, usually in his worker placement games, because it is a very real scenario in which you are blocked out of what you wanted to do. I loved Speakeasy. I think it was, I have a big table, like my game table is a very large game table, and 4-player just fit on the table with room for 4 coasters and drinks. I will say, the other thing I want to say is the player aids are fantastic. The Speakeasy player aids are absolutely fantastic. We played with the asymmetric starting cards as well. There are 3 different decks of those that you deal around and you choose from, and I loved those. They just added a little bit of spice, not even spice, just a little bit of variety to the game that made it interesting. Because in Speakeasy, unlike in Scarface 1920, which is all about screw you, screw you, screw you, and I'm killing you and I'm knocking you out, there's no player, there's no direct player interaction in Speakeasy. There's no opportunity for me to move into Super Trooper's territory and kick him out. Right? It just doesn't happen. You've got independent mobsters that are basically NPCs that come out and do that. And again, you can plan and prepare for that, much like in Voidfall when you're planning for the war phase. It's not war, it's war in a solo co-op. It's the incursion phase. I can't remember what it's called now. It's been a nice cruisy day. I had a nice sleep in today. I've had a lot of coffee. had a couple of eggs with the fox for breakfast. It's been a nice Sunday. Rainy Sundays are the best, I gotta say. Speakeasy, 11 out of 10 for me, and I can't wait to play it at 3-2 player. Thumbs up all the way. I mean, you guys know that I'm a Lacerda whore anyway. I love his games. They just hit me in the right spot. So yeah, we played Speakeasy. It was wonderful. We followed that up with Power Grid. Now, Voldemort went out and bought Power Grid after playing Food Chain Magnet here in the bunker. And he was like, well, I think I'd like another economic euro. And I did a little bit of a study and learn for the game. And I was like, meh, okay, right. I said, fine, looks fine. Power Grid was really fun. It was really, 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 like, really fun. And it's like you've got these power converters. Let's start this properly. I really like Power Grid. So Power Grid is by Freedom Freeze. The art is by a whole army. And because Power Grid is like a 2007 game or something, it's published by 2F Spiel. Apologies, 2F Spiel. But it's been republished by like 24 other publishers in the meantime. And there are, if you go and look up Power Grid on BGG, you find as many versions as you do with Ticket to Ride. It's like Power Grid, my backyard. Power, my first Power Grid. Power Grid, I mean, oh my God, there are 7,000 versions of Power Grid. So on Power Grid, each round starts with an auction. And the auction basically has a number of cards, which are power converters. And these power converters will each spit out a certain number of power, between 1 and 7. I think 7 was the highest, comes out. And in order to buy those power converters, you need to spend money. You start with a certain amount of money. The Power Grid, the best way I can describe it, is an economic euro. But the whole game is very rinse-repeat. It's rinse-repeat, rinse-repeat, rinse-repeat. And it somehow manages to be just a rinse-repeat game that is still really engaging and interesting. And I'll come to that. So it starts with an auction. You have a number of power generators out, and they have a dollar value on the top. And if it's your turn, you choose one of those that are up for auction. You make a bid. So if it says 7 on the power generator, you have to bid a minimum of 7. You're an idiot if you bid any more than 7. So you start off, you say 7, it goes around the table. If anyone else bids higher, it's an auction. It goes round and round and round. Once everyone passes, whoever wins that takes it. You can only buy one power generator per round. So they take it. If it's my turn and I've said I want Power Grid number 7, which takes 2 oil and turns out 1 power, whatever, right? As an example, I'll take that one. And it goes round and round. Someone else bids for it and someone else wins it. It's my turn to pick another one. Another one comes out to the market. The market shuffles around a little bit. And I go again. I go, well, I'm going to bid on number 11. So I bid $11. And it goes round and round until everyone at the table has either a power converter in front of them, a power station in front of them, or has passed on their turn and said, I don't want one this turn, which is entirely possible. You only have to buy one in the first round. So you've bought a power converter, or you have a power converter in front of you. It takes some kind of resources. So there are 4 resources. There's coal, there's oil, there's rubbish, and there's uranium. And there's a 5th type of power converter that is basically, it's solar slash wind or river power, right? It takes no resources to go in. They're usually quite expensive and they take no resources. So you then have to make sure we're in the purchase phase. You've got to buy resources from a fluctuating market. As the resources come out of the market, they get more expensive. As they go back into the market, they get a little bit cheaper. And you've got to put those on your power stations. And then in phase 3, you're buying properties. So you've got this market, this board, rather, I should say. It's a geographical board, which we were playing Germany. It's all German all the time in my world right now. We were playing Germany, which, of course, had Essen in it. It was wonderful to see Essen in a board game. Thank you very much, Freedom Freeze. I appreciated what you did there. And you are going into cities, and you are building a house, a home. It's probably realistically a commercial property. And it's got to be attached to your network. So your first house can obviously go anywhere. And then your second one needs to be attached to your network. And the first house into a city, or the first building into a city, is $10. The second one's $15. The third one's $20. When you build your next one in the next city over, it's the same. The first house is $10. The second one's $15. The third one's $20. But there's also a connection price. So you've got lines that run from one city to the next. And so you've got to pay that connection as well. Sometimes those connections are wicked expensive. Sometimes they're really cheap. And then once everyone's bought, and you can buy as much as you can afford. You can buy as much as you can afford. Then you are going to power your buildings. So if you have five buildings and you have five power coming out of your system, well, you will get compensated on this. It's a chart of diminishing returns. So it's $22 for your first one. You then get, I think it's like 18 for the second one or something. Each subsequent house that you power contributes a little bit less. And that's to try and assist with eliminating the runaway leader scene where somebody's got, well, I've got 19 houses out. Well, not 19 because you win the game, but I've got 12 houses out. I'm getting powered for 12, but it's not 12 times your two houses. It's not six times your two houses, for example. So it's a sliding scale of returns, which I think is smart. You get your money. Great. And you start again. You go back to the auction. You buy power plants. You buy resources. You build buildings, and then you power them. And it really is, there's a few more little bits in there from a rules point of view, but that's really the game. It's one of those where the game moves very quickly. It moves you're very quickly through the phases. It moves very quickly. So there's not a lot of downtime. And the board state is something you've got to keep a very close eye on, because in the first, we'll call it act or section of the game, cities can only have one building on them. So if you're building in an area and the cities around you all get a building on them, you have to pay more. So you can't build there. You can build through it. So for example, if I'm in city A and city B costs 10 to get to, but there's no building space there, I've got to go to city C and I've got to pay the pipeline cost between the two cities as well as the building price there, if that makes sense. It made sense in my head. You can't get physically blocked out of building, but if you haven't got something adjacent to you, building gets expensive really, really fast. And Super Trooper cleaned our clock. I'm going to say largely because, not because I'm going to attribute this largely to what happened in the game, not because he's not excellent at board games, but I think we handed him a little bit of a victory early on, because there were the three of us kind of squabbling up in one corner, and he dropped his whole scenario down in another corner, the entire opposite end, and we were kind of all duking it out, and he was like, "Well, you guys are just going to leave me alone. I'm good with that." And the issue is, once you've built into one side, getting over there to fuck around with his section was going to be way too expensive for any of us. He also had three power converters at one point that were all solar, so didn't have to buy any resources. The resource market was irrelevant to him. So we kind of, through our decisions, I don't say we handed him the game, but allowing him to get three power converters that took no resources and allowing him to build in a section of the map without any of us there, it was really silly of us, to be honest. And so he absolutely rinsed us. He rinsed us. I think there were a couple of us that got close-ish to him towards the end of the game, but he rinsed us. I thought it was simple to teach, simple to play, brutal as it unfolds. And I really, really enjoyed Power Grid. That's by Freeman Freeze, as I mentioned earlier. And I would play Power Grid anytime. I'd love to see how it plays at two with a smaller map. I don't need to see another map, realistically, because they're all just variations of a theme. But yeah, very, very interesting. We followed that up with an IP game, which, let's be honest, IP games have the potential to go very, very badly because they're selling themselves based on the IP and not the quality of the game. But we played The Expanse, the game. I think it's called The Expanse, the game. Now, The Expanse is a series of novels that ended up being a fabulous TV series. And this is basically themed after the TV series because it's got art on the cards and whatnot that models what's in the TV series. Now, I love The Expanse. I came to The Expanse quite late, which was wonderful. When I say it's wonderful, it means I didn't have to wait for anything. I watched the series first, and when I came to The Expanse, it was done. So I got to binge the series in like one long sitting, which was amazing. And then I read all the books. And The Expanse is a fantastic sci-fi setting. So The Expanse, the game, it's basically, it's not quite a war game, but I'd say it's area control. It's area control. I mean, it's got war gamey aspects to it, but it's card driven. There's a card market, and you have to pay for cards with points. Your points are also your currency, and those cards are multi-use. And one of the really interesting aspects of the cards is that when you pluck a card from the market, there's a number at the top right, which is the action points. You can use it for action points. And action points allow you to move your fleet around, to deploy new fleet, to drop influence on different bases. And all the bases are obviously themed, you know. The game production is very, very low. I'm going to be perfectly honest. You've got a board that's divided into bands. You've all got a bunch of cubes. And that's it. You've got a little player mat in front of you that's a card that outlines what you've got. But you're basically pushing cubes around. It's not quite a coin game, but it's got about the same production quality. And I know Super Trooper's looking at getting Battleships to do some 3D printed stuff for it. And I hope he does, because I'd really like to play The Expanse again. But basically, you pull these cards from the market, and on the top right, there's action points. And you can use those action points to do certain things. And at the bottom of the card there is some text, which is an event. Right? And that event is very loosely themed around the name of the card and the art on the card. If you know the factions that are in The Expanse, you know, then you know that there are some pretty amazing things that can happen for the Belters and for the, you know, MCR and for Protogen. It was really fantastically done. However, if you use a... Let me take a breath. So you have a choice with the card to use it for the action points or use it for the event. And the event will allow you to do certain things. Sometimes the event will allow everyone at the table to do certain things. There are four icons on the card representing the four main factions. So if I draw a card and I choose to use it for the action points, the event is then up for grabs by the other players. Now, it's up for grabs in initiative order. There's an initiative track on the board, and there are little tokens on there for each of the factions. And so if the card I have has the logo, for example, of the United Nations and the OPA and MCR, I've used it for action plans, where you look at the initiative track to see who's further up for the United Nations and the MCR, and they will get the option of using that card. They take that card, they use it for the event, and then they go to the bottom of the initiative track. It was really interesting. It had a very interesting, mildly socio-political bit in it with that. I mean, the veneer of it is not set. Like, the actions aren't necessarily overly themed. If there's a faction that's left off the card, that's because it would make sense. For example, you know, the OPA, the Belters, don't have access to cards that are really specific to Earth, for example, because the Belters really didn't come in that part of the solar system. I really, really, really enjoyed The Expanse. I thought for a game that is of that age and that is IP, and as I said, the production, the card art's great. The card art's great. The theming's great. The board is very generic, and you're basically just pushing colored cubes around. But I really enjoyed it. I'm a fan of The Expanse, so that helps. I'm a big fan of The Expanse IP. That was by Jeff Engelstein. It's published by Pendragon Studios. The artists are unfortunately uncredited. And I said, that game has been out for a while. And to the best of my knowledge, very, very much out of print, much like things like the Battlestar Galactica game. Which is also pretty good. I think this is better than Battlestar. I think Battlestar is more thematic, but I think this is a better game, and I really enjoyed it. So we're getting to the tail end of the day, and we thought, you want one more? Let's do one more. We'll do one more. So we played, this was at Dustin's request, we played Photosynthesis, which again is a little bit of an older game. And I like Far Away. I loved and hated Photosynthesis. I won't say in equal amounts. I think I loved it a little more than I hated it. When I say hated it, I mean that as a compliment. I think the puzzle in Photosynthesis is excellent. I think the surprise motherfucker moments in there of you thought you were getting something, but you're actually not because you can't read the board properly because you're an idiot. By that, I'm talking about myself, is fantastic. And it's really simple. It's a very simple bit of game. So you've got a board with a ton of hexes on it that are in concentric circles, and you've got three heights of trees that you can play with. You start with a number of them that are, you know, on the table next to you. They're the ones you can play with. You start with a number of them on your player board, which are locked. You've got to buy them with sun points. I argued quite vociferously that it shouldn't have been sun points, that it should have been simple glucose, because that's what trees work on. But anyway, and so you start. You go around the table, you put two trees out, and you've got this great big Pac-Man shaped sun that sits on one of the six corners of the hexagon shaped board, and it's shining sun into the board. And so once you've placed it all out, the sun shines. If it hits your tree, you get sun points. Yay! If it hits a little tree, you get one. If it hits a medium tree, you get two. If it hits a big tree, you get three. Easy peasy, right? There's only six trees on the board. Six. Everyone gets two to start. Oh, I've got two. Yay! Unless you've planted your tree behind someone else's tree. Because if you're in the shade of another tree, you don't get any sun. You wither and die. Your tree dies. It doesn't die. You just die a little inside because you didn't get your fucking sun points. So you get your two. And then with those two, you can unlock little acorns. You can unlock a smaller tree. You could, if you have an acorn on the board, you can convert that acorn to a small tree. If you've got more points later in the game, you convert your small tree into a medium tree if you have medium trees unlocked from your board. And if your medium tree is out there and you've got enough sun points on your board, you can convert that into a large tree. Great big beautiful tree. And all the four player boards have all unique trees. They're gorgeous. The art's gorgeous. It's a very pretty game. It's screaming out for someone to do some stupidly unnecessary full color miniatures, right? It's just screaming out for it. And so then at the end of the turn, the sun moves around the hexagon one corner, goes to the next corner, beam, shines some sun. And if you happen to get hit with that sun, you get some sun points. And if you have a large tree, you get 3 sun points. If your large tree is behind another large tree or within 3 spaces of another large tree, because shadows are cast, right? Right. So a small tree casts a shadow 1 hex, a medium tree casts a shadow 2 hexes, and a large tree casts a shadow 3 hexes. The number of times I had my big tree out that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get 3 sun. The sun moved around. It was in the shade of someone else's fucking big tree that was 3 hexes away. Oh, man. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And the way you get points in this is what you can do is once your tree is at its tallest point, you can chop it down and you get a little points disc based on how close you are to the middle of the board, right? The closer you are to the middle of the board, the higher the points are. Because if your tree's around the outside, your likelihood of getting sun is higher, and so the points are lower. If you plant trees around the outside, you're probably going to plant more trees, potentially. I don't know. None of us did that. But there'll be lower points. And once the sun's traveled around the whole meadow 3 times, the game's over. I want to say it was an hour, maybe 70 minutes at a stretch. I thought photosynthesis was fantastic. I really do. And that spatial puzzle in there of which tree do I grow next, which is all well and good, but 3 other motherfuckers are going after you and they're growing their trees. So are you going to get sun in your next turn? Meh, who knows? I think there was one round I got 2 sun. There was one round I got 9. And so you have to be both strategic and tactical with photosynthesis. Otherwise, you're done. You're absolutely done in every possible way. I thought it was great. It's an older game, but it was made by Hjalmar Hach, as a art by Sabrina Miramon, and published by Blue Orange Games. Those, OMC Crew, are the games that were. It was only 4. I gotta say, I loved all 4. I mean, I don't play games I hate. I don't hate many games. I really don't. I don't even dislike many games. But I really, really enjoyed those 4. And it was excellent. We're gonna take a little quick break. You can listen to some meaningless ads so that I can go get a cup of coffee.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Welcome to FOMO Mofo, where I take you through my personal angst-ridden journey of capitalist acquisitionism. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunding projects, but merely those that have my personal attention, either because they are by a design and development team I like, a theme I enjoy, or because they have pretty toys. Oh man, do I love it when they have pretty toys. And sometimes, hopefully, many times, it's all 3. You'll notice I skipped past incoming this week. Literally nothing in the mail this week. Postman Pete's having a week off to deliver bills. You know, people deliver bills? Bills are all electronic these days. Does anybody get a bill in the mail anymore? I don't know. I don't know what he does when he's not carrying board games. He just probably sits around waiting for me to order more board games. So this week I've got a few I want to talk about. It's still quite quiet in crowdfunding. And man, I will take it. I will take the break because, oh, man, I got a lot of games I got to play anyway. And the first one I want to talk about is one that you might look at and go, what, again? We're doing this again? This is Final Girl Season 4. Now, Final Girl is a solo-only game, and you would think that I would be all over that like a fat kid on a Smartie, right? And that's not very politically correct. But I guess, yeah. I'm going to take it anyway. You'd think I'd be all over it because I love solo games. I love pulpy horror. Always love pulpy horror. And I'll tell you, the only reason I haven't, and not because it's a bad game, I've played Final Girl. I played it the first year it came out at PAX Australia. They had, I didn't buy it. They had the core box and the first four, I think it was at that time, season one was four feature films. Camp Happy Trails and all the OG four. And it looked great. It looked super fun. I didn't buy it because I think at the time I'd bought so many games that year. And that was my first PAX maybe. My second, I'd spent a lot of money. I'd spent a lot of money at PAX. There was a lot of new releases at PAX that year, and I'd spent a fair bit. And I'm like, well, I'll keep an eye out for it, blah, blah, blah. And then I had season two since then, season three since then. And the reason I haven't gone in for it now is it's, there's so much content, and I don't... It's not that I have a problem, but I have a problem, right? Like, when I buy a game I like, I'm like, oh, I better get it all. Better get it all. I like it. I like that game. Right? It's like Too Many Bones. I own everything Too Many Bones. Will I play everything Too Many Bones? Maybe before I die. But I certainly didn't need to buy it in the pattern and whatnot that I did buy it in. And so I've kind of not bought into Final Girl. Also largely because, geez, there's a lot of Final Girl now. Like after three seasons and there's so many extras. So many boxes of minis and so many things. But Final Girl Season 4 is up. And I had a look at it. Gee, it looks really good. They've said this is their last season of this style of format. From here, they're moving on to what they're calling Era 2. That's Van Ryder Games, who's done all the Final Girl stuff. They're moving on to Era 2, where they're going to look at it very differently. And it sounds like after this season drops, they're going to be looking at little add-ons, whether it's quality of life add-ons or single feature films or little extra things. They got a lot of content. I think between the four seasons, they probably have close to 20 feature films. Right, man. Ain't nobody got time for that. But I really like the looks of these films, right? The season four is a little wild. You look at the five feature films of this season, I think, which I think is a pretty good deal, actually. There's five feature films, and there's like a Five Nights at Freddy themed one. There's the Headless Horseman, you know, with the flaming pumpkin head. They're a little wacky this time around, but I'm here for that. The season four, All In. Look, I'll hit you with it first. In Australia, it's $285 Australian, and deliveries only another $40. When I say only, it's Australian, but that's only 15%, right? That's for the amount of game that is in the All-In, I think that's perfectly reasonable in 2026, I gotta say. Because that comes with minis, that comes with alternate meeples for all the victims, that comes with all the extras, and it's all in a single storage box and the five feature films. And I think it looks like imagine a world where $320, whatever it is, $325, that sounds like a bargain. There's a lot of game in there. And there's a lot of games out there for more than that that have a lot less game. And that's not to justify what's going on. I mean, Speakeasy was 185 Australian. It's one game, but the production quality is just out of sight. Speakeasy's production quality is just ridiculous. I'm not familiar innately with Van Ryder Games' production quality, but I've got to imagine that by the time they're doing four seasons of it, that people are happy. I only ever toyed with season one when it first came out, and I played a little bit of a demo of it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I like the mechanic. I like the timer. I like the wind down. I like the fact that it's hard to play, as in it's hard to win, rather. I like that in a solo game. I don't want a solo game that hands me victory first time. That annoys me and kind of gives me less incentive to play again, realistically. The other nice thing is delivering this year. You know, it's supposed to be delivering this year, I think, in August. So you're talking about a 6 or 7 month turnaround, which means they've probably got it all done. You know, if they haven't entered production, they're probably just waiting for initial orders to enter production after Chinese New Year finishes to try and get it just by August. So I gotta be honest, it's a maybe for me. I don't have a lot on my radar for 2026. You know, I'm looking at this. I'm eagerly awaiting the Voidfall Resurgence expansion, which will be coming out sometime this year. I'm keen to see what Agricola Zombies looks like just because it's Agricola Zombies and it just gets me right in the sweet spot. Deadman Tales, which is the new IP for the new owners of Zombicide, is one I'm watching for and waiting for. There's a couple of things that are on my radar for this year. But not a lot. You know, it's, in previous years, I've gone into January and go, oh, man, there's like 15 things coming out this year I'm really, really excited for. And it's not that I'm not excited. It's just, and it's not that I'm hitting saturation in the bunker. I think I'm just at a point where I'm looking around going, I got a lot to play here that I'm really, really happy with. And so, in theory, I think I'm just hitting a spot where I'm a little pickier with my dollars. Maybe. We'll see. I'm a man-child after all, so who knows, right? Like, really, who knows? I mean, it could all just be bullshit. And next week, I'm find that I've pledged for 19 different things. We'll see. So that's Final Girl Season 4. Up next is Ludos, the Ancient Games Collection. Now, Ludos, the Ludos Collections, this is the fourth collection in the Ludos series. They're a little independent company. I think it's a husband and wife for memory. And what they do is they pick up like historical games, games that have been around sometimes for 200-300 of years, and they've been around culturally for a very long time, and they produce them for release. And they release them in bundles of four. And they look really nice. And we're not talking about absolute top-shelf production, but really, you're getting a bundle of four games from these guys for $63 Australian. And every time they launch Kickstarter, you can actually get their whole back catalog. It's a very reason. If you were like, oh, I like the looks of this, if you wanted to go to 16 historical games, when I say historical games, I'm talking about stuff, I'm not talking about Go, but things that perhaps were played culturally for a couple of hundred years, and they've turned them into a marketable, sellable board game. They look very cute. They're very colorful. Deliveries, shipping's estimated. There's no hard-on shipping, which is rough to take. It's $27, which is 42%, which is really high, but I think that's more related to the low price for the games rather than shipping being overblown. I think it's worth a look. It's not for me because most of these are two-player games and they just... I grew up playing a lot of nondescript board games. You know, I remember for Christmas one year, I got a big box. It was 101 board games. And it was like checkers and chess and Parcheesi and no-name brand Sorry. And then 96 games that were historical games from somewhere that they just printed a card for and used literally the same 16 tokens for every game in the box. But there may be families out there that look at this and go, shit, yeah, that's for me for $60 or whatever. Let's throw those on the shelf and play them. Worth a look. I love little indie publishers, little indie distributors these days. Very passionate about it and always looking at them. And so I think if you are in the mood for four little box games that look like they travel really well in your caravan or your backpack, I think they'd be worth it. Lastly, I want to talk about a little bit of a beast. When I say a little bit of a beast, I don't have a problem with this, but it hit my radar, it hit my algorithm, and I earmarked, I thought, I'll go look at it when it goes live, because I like Steffenfeld's work. And this is the Steffenfeld City Collection, which is done by Queen Games. And he's been making these games for 463 years or something. Not really. And I mean, no disrespect to Steffenfeld. I think he makes exceptional games. I think he makes unexceptional games. But I think he's responsible for bringing us Castles of Burgundy, right? And Civolution, which I really enjoy Civolution. I think it's a little overwrought, but I think the Civolution is an outstanding game. So this is the City Collection, and I think there's 10 games in the City Collection. In this, we'll call it crowdfunding campaign, it looks like Marrakesh maybe, and I'm not going to go into all 10 games, don't worry. This is just a broad brush. Marrakesh looks like he's getting a little bit of a glow up and a big box. All 10 games have a folded space insert that's been designed for them, right? All 10. But other than Marrakesh getting a little bit of a glow up, and I think if I'm reading it right, there's a new expansion for it. It could literally just be putting it all in one place. I'm sorry, I don't have more details than that. This literally looks like an online shopping page for all the Steffenfeld stuff by Queen Games, right? Look, I like some of Steffenfeld's work. If you like his City Collection, you don't have it already, well, here's your chance. I'm not sure that the City Collection has held up over the years. I think that there's probably a couple of things in there that are really great. I've heard good things about Marrakesh. I've never played it. The fact that Marrakesh is getting the glow up for this tells me that it's probably the one that people are really interested in, perhaps. But I've got to admit, I'm not a collector of the classics. You know, most of the beige classics in our group sit with Super Trooper and Voldemort. You know, they've got all the Hansa Teutonicas and all the El Grandes and all the Reiner Knizia stuff. You know, I I've been eyeing up Druids of Adora, which is Steffenfeld's latest. It's got a really sort of mixed run out there. I think it looks really interesting. I think it looks really fun. I know that there's a couple of content creators out there that's just kind of, but it might just not be their jam, you know. But I like the looks of it. I've watched some gameplay. I have heard that the rule book's a bit of a crime against humanity. So I've been looking at that, and that's Steffenfeld's new work. And I really like his new work. As I said, I like Civolution. I love Castles of Burgundy, which is not new work. But look, you want to get all the games, and you want to get folded space inserts for all the games, which gives you inserts for all 10 games. You can buy the inserts. If you've got the games already, you can buy the inserts for 25 euros per game, right? Which I'm kind of mixed on as well. I mean, I own a lot of Folded Space stuff, and I usually order it direct from Folded Space in Europe because it's cheaper than getting it locally, and I don't think I've paid 25 euros for many of them unless they're really, really big. But if you want the all-in, like all the games, all the extras, all the Folded Space inserts, and to be fair, this pledge level has only been pledged for 3 times, and none of those are by me, it's more than $1,300 Australian. Now, even for 10 games, that's $130 a game for some games that are really quite dated. And these are not big box beauties. Like Civolution wasn't $130. I don't think I paid $130 for Civolution, right? Now, granted, these all come with a Folded Space insert at that price, right? Okay. My average Folded Space insert, I want to say, is $25 Australian. And that's when I get them straight from Folded Space. Because I don't know how they do it, but they do international shipping for all their Folded Space inserts for 9 euros. It's insane. You want to order 5, and I know their stuff's light, but I want 5 Folded Space inserts. I order them all from Folded Space. I pay 9 euros international shipping, and it's here in like 8 days. It's insane. The other challenge, not challenge, big problem I have with this campaign is I have looked everywhere, and shipping is not disclosed anywhere on the campaign page. Not even an estimate. Now, if I'm wrong, send me a message. If you know where it is and you can find it, send me a message in a screen grab. But I looked and I went to the comments, and there are people in the comments going, can we get some information about shipping? That to me is clinically insane in 2026. When you want people to pledge for big, heavy boxes, I'm not talking about heavy and BGG weight. I'm talking about, I want 10 games and 10 Folded Space inserts, but you're not going to tell me how much the shipping is? I'm already giving you $1,300. The whole campaign just looks like it's like an online shopping channel. I'm not shitting on Queen Games, guys. I'm just saying, it's a hell no from me. I can be honest, I'm not watching a whole lot right now. There's nothing else that's live that I'm watching, but there's quite a bit starting up this week. Tuesday this week, which is the big day for crowdfunding to go live, Tuesday this week, there's 4 or 5 campaigns that I've been eyeballing. Not necessarily I want to buy, but I certainly want to know more about. It's going to be a big week for that stuff, and February and early March is a really big space for a lot of games going live. So watch this space. Welcome, dear OMC crew, to Voices in My Head, where I sit around the table, talk to myself for just a little while longer about something that means something to somewhere, somehow, deep inside. And today we're talking about something near and dear to my heart. And that's board game food. All the snacktastics. This is something that, man. Okay, so board games and food, they go together so well. But there's boundaries. And I'm not talking about like pizza at the table, but I regularly have people around for board games at my place. And that's twofold. One, I have the bunker. I have a dedicated space where we can set a table up. We've got privacy. We can lock the door. We can make sure there's no children. We can make sure they are outside the realm of disturbances. I also have an entertainer's house, right? I've got a kitchen that I adore that is just equipped for output. We've got great dining spaces. I also fucking love to cook, right? I've been working in hospitality my whole life. I'm a chef. I'm a pastry chef. I've never worked as a butcher, but I've trained as a butcher. And literally, I have a superpower. I can make anything with food, really. Like, I really can. Sometimes I do. You know, and when we're having people around for when I'm having people around for board games, the 3 days leading up, I'm like, ooh, what am I making? And that's not because I want to impress. I couldn't care less, right? The guys come around. I could feed them a ham and cheese toastie, a grilled cheese sandwich. They would be happy as they couldn't care less. Right? And they're out there going, no, Hammonds, we care. We care very much. No, I know that. But it's not what they're here for. The reality is, though, I can do this stuff with almost no effort, right? Like, I love being in a kitchen. The kitchen is my happy place. It always has been my happy place. And I love going into a kitchen and creating something that makes people happy. And so, like, the other night, I woke up at 2 a.m. and I'm going to talk a little bit about some of my favorite off-the-shelf stuff as well, right? So you might go, well, I'm not interested. This isn't board games. Oh, this is so board games. Grab a pen. Some good stuff coming. One of my favorite relishes, and I'm sorry for any of you that don't live in Australia, but this is by a company called Drunken Sailor. Now, Drunken Sailor, you can get stuff online if you order a certain number of jars. It's free shipping. And one of my favorite things they make a jalapeno and tequila relish that you can literally put on everything from roast pork to toasted sandwiches to scrambled eggs to baked fish. It is so good. And so the other night I woke up and I thought, I could make Big Mac sauce out of that, couldn't I? Like, literally 2 a.m, I went, bing. And so I thought, well, I've got, because I had all these other plans for board game day, because yesterday was a long day, so I've got to do lunch and dinner. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? And there's some classics. We'll talk about some of the classics that I do regularly. They're my go-tos because they're easy. They can just simmer away. So I made this burger sauce that was this jalapeno tequila relish, a little bit of tomato ketchup, and QP mayonnaise, because QP mayonnaise is better than, oh, man. Candy. It's candy, right? We're not talking, QB mayonnaise is like candy. And it was the bomb. Imagine Big Mac sauce, but just with that lovely fruity tingle of jalapeno. It was very good. I'm like, well, what do I do with it now? Now, I could make burgers. If you've listened at length, you know that there was a time in my life when I owned a small chain of burger shops here in Australia, and I made one of the best burgers in the country, and I still make amazing burgers. No one ever complains when I put the charcoal on. I've got a Kamado Joe Big Joe. It's a charcoal barbecue. I stopped cooking on gas about 10 years ago and cook exclusively on charcoal now. And no one ever complains when I'm doing burgers, especially burgers on charcoal. Man, there's something about burgers on charcoal. Meat and fire. If you're a vegetarian out there, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry you're a vegetarian. I'm sorry you've got to listen to me sort of wax lyrical about meat on fire. But oh my Christ, meat on fire. So no one ever complains, but I didn't want to do cheeseburgers because largely when I do burgers, like, it's so easy to do burgers for me and fire up the charcoal. But if I'm going to fire up the charcoal, I don't want to make 6 burgers. I want to make 26 because it's so easy to get them off and have them amazing. But I thought, okay, so imagine if Cinnabon and Five Guys had a baby. Right. So what I made was cheeseburger scrolls. This was for lunch yesterday. So I made scroll dough, a little bit sweet because sweetness isn't just about making the bread sweet, but it makes it tender and fluffy as well. So I made it wasn't sweet to the taste, but it was a lightly sweetened bread dough. And I rubbed that with French's yellow mustard. And then I made a burger patty mix and I pressed that into it. And then I sprinkled that with diced white onion and Mexican cheese blend. I rolled it up and I cut it into basically cheeseburger scrolls. Pop them in a pan, more white onions, more cheese on top, and that's what we baked for lunch yesterday. And the great thing is I made those at 8 a.m, popped them in the fridge, pulled them out an hour before lunch to let the dough warm up into the oven. They were sex on a stick. Oh my God, they were so, so, so good. And that zingy burger sauce, I mean, it was literally, we stopped gaming, went upstairs, slapped some of these on a plate, knife and fork, little burger sauce. 12 minutes later, dishes in the dishwasher, back to games. That's what I love on board game days is when you get something that's delicious, it's hedonistic. It hits you in that sweet spot and you are happy. Board games make me happy, right? Board games and good food make me happier. So that's what we had yesterday. We had cheeseburger scrolls for lunch, which were just fuckalicious. Dinner was another classic. I went and got a Cape Grim brisket, Tasmanian brisket, which is where the best briskets in Australia come from. And I just did a brisket. I fired up the charcoal, put the brisket on, wrapped it, finished it off. It was absolutely perfect. It was perfectly cooked. I've been doing briskets for 30 years, you know, American barbecue style. So we had brisket and mac and cheese, and I made a quick coleslaw with a green goddess dressing. And It was so easy. Bread rolls, condiments. We had brisket and mac and cheese. I think the peanut ate her weight and my weight and Lou's weight and mac and cheese. There was mac and cheese leftovers for everyone. There was no brisket leftovers because brisket stays here. I said, sorry, guys, you could have mac and cheese. But what I did do now is I take the leftover brisket and I make some of it into brisket pies or make some of it into like, I was thinking I could do brisket scrolls for the next game day because it freezes beautifully. I've got a vacuum packer, freeze it down. And I thought, what can I do with the brisket? Well, I've got brisket there for at least another game day lunch, which is amazing. And let me tell you, peeps, I make a good brisket. Like, I've been doing brisket for years. I have a Yoder Wichita. So if you don't know what a Yoder Wichita is, you can have a look. But Yoder Wichita, it's a quarter ton solid cast iron. It's iron, steel, plate steel. Offset smoker. It sits in my backyard. I can actually put 3 briskets and 12 racks of ribs in there if I so choose. I haven't used it in years, right? And it's just sitting there and I look at it and I think, oh, just haven't used it in years. I should probably sell it. Going. Anyone wants a Yoder Wichita? It needs a little bit of a refurb. Anyway, so I have a Yoder Wichita because I've been smoking meats for a long time. And so that's what we did yesterday. We had cheeseburger scrolls for lunch. We had brisket mac and cheese and green goddess coleslaw for dinner. That was it. Piece of cake. But I had some wild moments. Like sometimes there's one week I made butter chicken and then I did like Chinese style steamed buns. You know, like the barbecue pork buns that we love and everyone can eat 35 of. I did those with butter chicken inside. They were pretty good. They weren't amazing. If I did them again, I'd do them a slightly different way, but they were pretty darn fine. Butter chicken steamed buns, and everyone got a steamer basket for lunch. I had 5 little butter chicken steamed buns in there. There wasn't a steamed bun left at the end of the day. I mean, it was easy. I made them up early, pop them all in, put the steamers in the fridge, pull the steamers out, steam them. I love that kind of shit. They were so good. I love fresh bread. Like, I've got a half chub every day of the week for fresh bread, right? I bake sourdough for the family all the time, but I make a beautiful flatbread. We'll often have, lamb koftas and flatbread. I did spiced lamb pitas, which are a Turkish thing. And they're like a little bread boat with mints and yummy things inside. And they were amazing. They're so good. And so I love catering for my friends. One of my go-tos is I'll do fresh paninis. So I'll do fresh paninis in the broiler. And I'll start the day off by baking a loaf of fresh focaccia. And then we split those. And we put usually some of my Indonesian duck fat chili paste on there. Some beautiful cheeses and meats. I'm a sucker for Havarti cheese. It's got this buttery, creamy, nutty sort of middle-of-the-road taste that's, I won't say nothing, but imagine if mozzarella was a real cheese. And I'm not saying mozzarella isn't a real cheese. Mozzarella has a place in our world, and I will die on the hill that says mozzarella has a place in the world. But you would never have mozzarella on a cheese board. Not enough taste, right? So mozzarella does amazing things, but Havarti is like mozzarella with flavor, and it melts so gloriously. So I'll often make these beautiful paninis with... I make my own capicola. You know, I've got a chili and garlic capicola. I've actually got one piece left in the freezer because I make my own capicola out of pork neck and vacuum pack in lots. And that's also another one that comes out regularly for game days is capicola paninis, which is just so beautiful. A little fresh arugula and rocket here in Australia, arugula outside of Australia. And they're really popular and they're super easy for me because I get up in the morning, I put a pot of coffee on, I start a loaf of focaccia. Focaccia is out of the oven by 9, it's cooling down. At 11:45, I come up, split the focaccia in half, fill it with stuff, into the broiler, make paninis, and it's a go-to, and I adore it. I love paninis. Like, they're just so easy. And that fresh bread, sometimes I even push the boat out. Like, I made, like, a chili and cheese focaccia. Olive and rosemary is a classic. Sometimes I just keep it plain, little sesame seeds on top. But, man, so easy. But outside of that, another crowd favorite we do for dinner. I do for dinner. We're back to the royal we again. One of my favorite things for board game nights because it's just so satisfying and it can sit in the stove and basically simmer all afternoon. Pozole rojo. Now, pozole is a Mexican stew. I believe, I may have this wrong. I apologize in advance if I got this wrong. It's from Oaxaca. And you've got pozole rojo, which means red pozole, and it's basically a meat stew. And it's made from pork neck, pork belly, beautiful chilies. I've got guajillos and poblanos in my cupboard every day of the week because I love them. They're a beautiful mid-tier for heat, fruity Central American chili, and they're wonderful. I get them dried. They're imported from Mexico, and they're dried, and they're just so, the guajillos are so beautiful, and the poblanos, as I said, they're fruity. They're a 4 out of 10 for heat, so you could put a ton in there. I usually do a little chipotle and adobo, which gives that smokiness and brings the heat up just a little. Lots of onions, lots of green peppers. I sometimes cheat a little, put a little celery in there, not because I'm trying to be healthy, but I like that celery when it breaks down. It gives you a beautiful taste. A lot of people don't realize celery is full of a lot of natural MSGs, a lot of natural, it's just really good in savory dishes. And then I will make fresh cornbread on the side of that. Now, my cornbread's a little bit different to traditional cornbread. It's a little bit lighter. It's a little bit fluffier, full of buttermilk. It's got cornmeal in it, fresh corn, lots of olive oil, a little pinch of sugar. Sometimes I like putting a little Spanish onion through my cornbread. And instead of having the pozole with a rice or with a potato, we put a slab of cornbread in the bowl. We dump the pozole on top, and we have fresh jalapenos and sour cream on top of that. It's hard to get in Australia, but I can get my hands on hominy from time to time. Hominy is a great big fat starchy white corn. It's a beautiful thing. It almost looks like a white chickpea, but it's actually from the corn family. It's quite starchy. It has the texture and taste almost of a corn-ish potato, and it's what white corn tortillas are made from. So they call it, when you grind it up into a flour, it's called masa, and that's what they make tortillas out of. But hominy is a beautiful thing, and it gives this lovely, edgy texture to the pozole. I am a big fan of pozole rojo. It's one of my go-tos, and no, I could probably just serve pozole every game night, and people be like, "Woo, pozole!" No one cares. No one cares one bit, right? But some of my favorite little snacks at the table. So, Costco sells these peanut butter stuffed pretzel bites, which are just little bits of hot, sweet, salty sex in my mouth, right? And I love those fuckers. And the only thing that makes them better than they are as they come out of the jar is to dip them in chocolate, right? I love salty sweet. Reese peanut butter cups, if you put them in front of me, I will eat them. I'm like a domesticated turkey. I have no self-control, right? If you put a bowl of those in front of me, I will eat them until I'm dead. I just cannot stop. But these lovely, these peanut butter pretzels, you can put them out as they are. They're gorgeous. If you've got the time to chocolate dip them, they're fantastic. I came across, and you could just Google it. It's pretty famous now. It's pretty easy to find. If you go to Instagram and have a look for potato chip bark, it popped up on my algorithm feed, I want to say a year and a half ago. There's this little pastry shop in the States that's making potato chip bark. Now, for those of you that don't know, like, bark is not a thing we eat in Australia, really. It's hard to find. Not hard to find. It's not called bark, I don't think. Bark is basically chocolate with stuff in it. Almond bark is chocolate with almonds in it, but lots of almonds, right? And you just break it up into chunks and you eat it. Well, potato chip bark, I make that fairly regularly. It is, when it comes out of the table, I've got this little cupboard in the bunker with a door on it. And we'll be playing games, and someone will look up and they'll just dart their eyes over at the door. And that's the signal of, you got any potato chip bark in there? You got any? You got any of that potato chip bark, Jemez? Yesterday, I didn't have any. I didn't make any. But basically, you buy crinkle cut chips, potato chips, crisps, and you crush them up, and you fold them through milk chocolate, and you lay them out on a piece of baking paper until they're cold, and then you cut them into pieces or break them. It is, oh my Christ, it is so good. A potato chip bark is just, oh man, that's salty sweet. Again, I don't have a huge sweet tooth, so whenever you can make something salty sweet, it just takes that edge off it for me. And potato chip bark, people look at me like I'm nuts when I go, people go, what is it? And I go, I'm not telling you, just take a bite. And of course they trust me because they're lunatics, it could be anything. And so they have potato chip bark and they go, what the shit is that? And I go, that's chocolate with potato chips in it. And their eyes fall out of their head. So yeah, life is good. I got a lot of, schmunkerl going on in my life right now, and almost missed it. There's two things I make regularly. One is maple bacon jam, and it's literally exactly what it sounds like. It's jam made from maple and bacon. And when I do make maple bacon jam, there's two or three people in my life that put their hand up and go, yes, I would like some of that, please. And in order to make, you know, a 200 ml jar of maple bacon jam, I need 400 grams of bacon because it cooks down to nothing. So it's not cheap. And I don't charge for profit. I just charge on ingredients. But it is not cheap to make maple bacon jam. Super Trooper kindly returned his maple bacon jam receptacle, which is a 1 liter canister, yesterday, just subtly slid that onto the bench when he arrived last night. Gentle reminder that, hey, Hammers, I'm out of maple bacon jam. But the other one I make is this Indonesian chili paste, which is fantastic. And I must have mentioned this in a previous pod because one of my regular listeners, shout out to Sonia in Canberra, said, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Any chance you want to tell me more? And so it's a really interesting origin story. I, for a long time, of course, I was the, you know, one of the burger kingpins here in Sydney, and not Vince D'Onofrio going around breaking legs, but I really had one of the best burger shops in the country. And, but part of that was anywhere I went, I want to try the local burger anywhere I went. And so I was in Toowoomba. Now Toowoomba is this little city. This is a city now. I don't know what it is. 150, 180,000 people in Queensland, which is the northern part of Australia, visiting friends. I have friends in Toowoomba. And they had this interesting looking burger place. I thought, well, hey guys, can we go out for burgers? And everyone around me understood. They're like, yeah, James here, we're going out for burgers. Of course we are. Not because that's what I have to eat, but it was like research for me. I'm like, well, I want to try everyone else's burger. And they had this burger there with a mayonnaise that was mixed with this. And I can't remember what it was called. It was, and I'm not going to come up with some, you know, racial language butchery. It was a sambal something. It was an Indonesian chili. And they sold it in jars. But what they did was because the owner of the restaurant had spent some time in Indonesia and he'd brought this recipe back with him. And so he made this chili paste, which you could buy in little jars, and he mixed it with mayonnaise as a burger condiment. And I love a bit of chili and mayo. Like, oh man, like sriracha mayo, still to this day, no problem at all. You know, sriracha mayo, amazing. Just a straight sriracha mayo, that just changes my life every day. A little hui fong, the traditional sriracha, a little kewpie mayonnaise. So good. Although in Australia, we have a company called Flying Goose. They make a really good sriracha, and they make it in with yellow peppers, and they make a green pepper, as in a green sriracha. They do a wonderful range of srirachas if you get your hands on them. Sriracha mayo, amazing. But anyway, back to this chili sauce. I can't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. I cannot. But this burger place in Toowoomba, they'd made a mayonnaise with this chili paste, and it's you can spread it, but it's quite thick. It's quite a thick chili paste. And I had this burger and I got the waitress over and I said, this is really good. And she told me the story. The owner lived in Indonesia. And she said, oh, he's just out back. Do you want to talk to him? I said, of course I want to talk to him. Right? That's what hospitality people do. Right? I'm constantly harassing people. And when I say harassing, we love it when somebody else is passionate about what we're passionate about. So he came out and he told me all about it. He said, I live there. This is what I learned it. This is where I learned it. This is what it's called. This is what it's made from. And he talked me through the ingredients list. And of course, I was making notes in my head. And he made his with bird's eye chilies. Now, if you're not familiar with bird's eye chilies, now this sauce was beautiful. It was hot. Bird's eye chilies, they're an ass punch from Satan's right hand, right? Like they're hot. So I don't make mine with bird's eye chilies. I make mine with Aleppo chili pepper. Now, Aleppo chilies, they're hard to find. I only know one place to get them consistently in Australia. And if you're overseas, you'll have to do a little bit of a search. But they're a Turkish chili. And they are wonderful. They are flaming red, orange in color. They are fruity like a jalapeno. They are maybe a 4.5 to 5.5 out of 10 for heat. So they're really nice in that mid-range. And so I use dried Aleppo chilies in mine. And I use dried chilies because they're more easily preserved. You know, you could use a fresh crushed chili in this, absolutely. You probably would need to increase the salt in it a little bit. But I make this and I put it in the fridge and it will last a year. No problem. It will last a year. No problem at all. And I bind this chili paste with duck fat. Now, if you're squeamish, again, to the vegetarians, I apologize. I'm not apologizing because you're a vegetarian. I'm apologizing because this is not content for you. So that said, if you are interested in giving this a go, this is very, it's not aggressive in flavor, but it's got some robust flavors. And you can do anything with it. Super Trooper puts it in his toasted sandwiches. You can put a spoon of it through a little bit of butter and toss some pasta in it. I mix mine with mayonnaise all the time as a condiment and stuff. And it is absolutely the tits. You can toss potatoes in it for roasting. You can literally make marinades for chicken and pork, whatever you like out of it. It's versatile. It's delicious. It's unique without being offensive in any particular realm. So Those of you that are on freedom units overseas, my apologies. I do live in all the other country, one of the every other country that uses the metric system. So if you are interested in this, you know, you'll have to do a little conversion. If you're not interested, just listen anyway or whatevs. So this is 250 grams of dried Aleppo chili flakes, 400 grams of duck fat, 300 grams of ground fresh ginger, 300 grams of crushed garlic, 100 mils of good quality fish sauce, 6 limes, juice and zest, 120 grams of brown sugar, and you might need a little salt at the end depending on how it goes. And it's really simple to put together. So I use a nonstick pan just because garlic, when you're cooking it, it can burn a little, right? Garlic is actually quite high in simple sugars. You can't taste it necessarily on the garlic, but it really is high in simple sugars. And cooking garlic can often result in scorching in your pan. So I use a nonstick pan for this, and I dump all the duck fat in, and I get it nice and warm. Not quite deep frying temperature, but nice and warm. And into that goes all the ginger and all the garlic. Now, I buy fresh garlic and I run it through my food processor. I don't puree it. I run it through my food processor. I do the same thing with my ginger. I peel it and I slice it and I pulse it through the food processor. You can buy crushed garlic and crushed ginger off the shelf. Just be aware they're quite wet. They're quite wet and you won't get the same flavor profile. It'll work, right? It'll work. And you'll have a beautiful chili paste that you can use on just about anything in about 20 minutes of your life. But if you do have the time and ability to use the fresh product, it will be 1,000 times better. So all the garlic, all the ginger goes in. And I just sit there and I stir that over a nice medium heat. It's going to sizzle away. I'm not deep frying it, but it's going to sizzle away for a good 10, 12 minutes. We want to take the coarse sting out of the fresh garlic. Now, there's nothing wrong with fresh garlic, right? But fresh garlic actually, because of the acids and volatile esters that are in it, it can feel quite spicy when it's raw. If you ever eat a raw garlic clove, it feels quite spicy. And we're just knocking that out. We're not trying to color it. We're not trying to caramelize it. We're just trying to, it's like a raw onion. We're just trying to knock that aggressive nature out of it. So once that's tender, real easy, you chuck in your lime zest first. So that's the grated up peel of the limes. You chuck all your chilies in. Now the chilies don't need to be cooked. They're a dried chili, but you want to give them a good 4 or 5 minutes there. What that's going to do is that's going to heat the dried chilies up, release the natural oils out of the chili, which will then merge and swirl around in the duck fat. Those natural oils will come out of the chili into the duck fat. And so your binding agent for this, which is the duck fat, is going to be infused with a beautiful Aleppo chili flavor. And once that's done, 5-6 minutes of that, throw everything else in. Put the brown sugar in, put the lime juice in, put the fish sauce in, swirl it around. You only need another 2 minutes to soak this, and you're just trying to make it homogenous and make sure that everything stirs really nicely, and then taste it. Everything in this recipe is to taste, guys. You're not baking a cake. This isn't a loaf of bread. If you like it sweeter, put more sugar in it. If you want to use palm sugar because you love palm sugar, use palm sugar. If you want a little bit of tropical in it, put a little coconut in it. If you want it more acidic, more lime. You can even put something like an apple cider vinegar in it if you want a little more of an acidic bite. If you don't like fish sauce, leave the fish sauce out. But that's most of the salt in this, just be aware. If you're not a fan of fish sauce and that pungent aroma of the fish sauce, which you'll smell when you're cooking it, but when you taste this, it's very subtle and it's in the background. If you really can't stomach fish sauce, use something else. You can use soy sauce. You can use a light soy sauce. Otherwise, this is going to be like a black paste. You can just use salt, right? You can use chicken bouillon. Powdered chicken bouillon is a great seasoning agent for this kind of stuff. If you're like, I'm not doing duck fat, no problem. Use olive oil. Use vegetable oil. Use clarified butter. Use clarified butter and do it with clarified butter. Holy shit, yes, right? If Aleppo chilies aren't your favorite and you're like, oh, I want to wind it up, I want it, get your hands on some bird's eye. Or get a serrano or get something that's got a higher heat profile than Aleppo's. But this will work with any chili. This is just what I happen to like. And it is so versatile. And I end up splitting up in jars, and Super Trooper and I share the batch. He used it a lot more than I do. So I think out of this, I got 6 jars. He got 4 jars. I got 2. This goes on just about anything, right? And I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. It's so versatile and delicious. Aside from that, guys, you know, there's a lot of things that I love to use in the kitchen that help with, you know, buffalo chicken wings are one of my favorite things. Obviously not at the table, you savage. We stop games, we go have wings, we come back. The best buffalo sauce available in Australia is by a company called Old Bones, the Old Bones chili sauce. I don't know what they put in it. It's like a 400 ml bottle for $23, and I don't even care. I grew up eating buffalo wings. I was a junior chef when Buffalo, New York launched buffalo wings because chicken wings are basically free, and buffalo wings were the pub food in every bloody pub. I've eaten more wings than I have drunk glasses of water in my life. Buffalo wings for me, they're a church I go to. The Old Bones buffalo sauce, the Old Bones chili sauce buffalo sauce. You will see it and go, Chemez, it's $23 a fucking bottle. I don't even care. Honestly, I was a Frank's baby for a long time, and then I went to Sweet Baby Ray's, did a lovely buffalo sauce, like really lovely buffalo sauce. They were my go-to for ages, particularly with a little bit of butter, melted butter folded through it. It was the bomb. The Old Bones one, it is absolutely the shit. Melinda's is an American chili sauce company. They do a truffle chili sauce that is fantastic. If you've ever had Truff, T-R-U-F-F, they were like the flavor of the month. They do a truffled chili sauce that's like $27 a bottle, and it's good. The Melinda's is half the price, and it's twice as nice. The truffle flavor is really, really prominent. The chili profile is lovely. It's not as acidic. Earlier I mentioned the Drunken Sailor Company. They do a jalapeno and tequila relish that is out of this world. They do a whole range of corn relishes and beetroot relishes, and their big thing is they've got spirits folded through all of their recipes for a bit of an accent, and it's delicious stuff. Really, really delicious stuff. In Australia, we've got Lily's Q, which is a range of barbecue sauces. They do a Carolina-style barbecue sauce, which is based on mustards, which is really unusual and outstanding. And that said, if you want a really incredible sauce that's great on all kinds of things, go look up a recipe for Alabama White barbecue sauce. Okay, it's actually a mayonnaise-based barbecue sauce. It's got horseradish, white peppers, a little bit of mustard in it. And it is Alabama White barbecue sauce is the most underrated condiment for just generic eating that I can even describe to you. I say to people all the time, you know, people I cross paths with at work, my friends group, be very careful about asking me about food because I will go down a rabbit hole and I won't come up for an hour and a half. I hope you've enjoyed a glimpse into my board game snacktastic life. I love matching food with board games. I love entertaining. Absolutely, absolutely adore it. And I hope that you get some time around the table. You can reach me on all the socials, peeps. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426. You can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram or by leaving a review on whatever platform you choose. If it's a bad review, I'll be okay. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. But if you don't really want to, give me a call. I got you, fam. This week's episode has been brought to you by Schmankerl. It's the Schmankerl that makes life worth living some days. Go out and get your Schmankerl. Start the week right. Peace out, mofos.